Hi, this is Claire, Matt and Kimber, Mix 94.5's Big Breakfast.
This is our Friends of the Show catch-up podcast with our favourite regulars.
Plus the special guests and celebs who hung out with us this week.
This Big Breakfast catch-up is for Allianz Home and Motor Insurance. Ah, Allianz.
Have you been paying attention? Is back on. It's a good lesson for those heading to school
it
today.
Is, yes.
It's back on Channel 10 at 8:30pm tonight. Tom Gleisner joins us this morning. Morning, Tommy.
Good morning, guys. Nice to be with you. Another Monday, another show.
Oh, isn't it? Tom, how much do you feel like you have to pay attention when you do the show?
I try, but no one. I realise there's just too much news coming across all our desks that to stay across everything. So I just basically, I'm the bachelor expert on the show, and then we sort of handle other portfolios with other people.
Well, yes. I mean, we quite often play a surprise quiz in here, which I suffer terribly at most times because it's Matt versus myself and we don't know what's going on.
Yeah, surprise the hell out of the two of them.
But we also thought that maybe you would be better off to quiz us because then Claire'sy can be a part of it and we can see where Claire'sy really lies in all of this as well.
We can probe our areas of expertise. We'll do a radio version of Have You Been Paying Attention? Oh, are your hands on your buzzers?
They are, mate, but we were promised Chris Brown.
Sorry. He's off being rejuvenated at a spa somewhere.
Being handsome somewhere.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. You got me, guys. All right. Well, let's start with a bit of Bachelor. We've been to Bali and Fiji, but this year's Bachelor finale took place in what exotic location?
Matt.
Oh.
Yes. New Caledonia.
You got it.
You did get it.
Very subtle product integration. I think we only had 27 shots of the airline. All right, Matt, you're one.
Matt got it as opposed to the girls on the show.
Exactly. Well, thank you. All right, now the Bachelor has fled Australia. Where is the honey badger?
Matt.
Sorry.
I just know.
No, you know.
The Kokoda Trail.
How good is that? I mean, I really wanted to escape the paparazzi.
Yeah.
It is so clever, isn't it? Because you can't be, you know, ridiculed for walking the Kokoda Trail.
Oh, no, you can't.
Charity. So it's
charity.
Yeah, very much.
Got it. All right.
Planned 8 months ago, yeah.
Matt is on two and using the scoreboard, looking a bit blank.
Yeah,
all right, Melania Trump made her first solo overseas trip this week.
Claire'sy.
Claire'sy.
Egypt.
Yes. One of the countries. Africa in general, Middle East, Africa, yes.
You have been paying attention.
Wow.
Only once.
Yeah, well, it's 1 point. It's more than someone's got. All right. Kim, come on, this is for you. There was an embarrassing standoff at Buckingham Palace yesterday.
Matt.
After who turned up? Unannounced, Matt.
It was Meghan Markle's sister was
kooky
turned away.
Yeah. Sam.
Oh, you called her kooky. That's an interesting.
Well, when you hear what happened, she just rolled up and said she wanted to see her half-sister. They said no.
Yeah.
She didn't just immediately storm off. She went to the gift shop and purchased some merchandise, then stormed off. All right, David Kosh from Sunrise notched up a milestone this week. What was the milestone?
They cryogenically froze him and brought him back out to do the read.
Kimber.
How dare you.
Claire'sy.
Claire'sy.
He notched up 200 fantasy games for Port. I don't know.
I don't know.
What
get
you got?
This, 16 years on Sunrise.
You're kidding.
Wow, nicely played, Koshy.
Yeah, well,
can you imagine getting up that early for... Well, you guys probably can.
Yes, we can. Thank you.
It's ridiculous.
All right, I think Matt is still well and truly had
he
a
is.
Couple... Well, shall we call this the final one?
Okay. The decider.
The decider. Well, for some of us who have scored. All right, the new series of Doctor Who returns tonight on the ABC. What's special about it?
Claire'sy, female Doctor Who.
Could you sound more excited?
No, I was thinking Matt got in first, actually, to be honest.
That's all right.
The first female Doctor hits our screens this evening. I think Matt might say.
Yeah, well done, mate.
Yes, I've been paying attention.
Good job.
Good on you, Matt. Paying attention mainly to The Bachelor, though.
I know.
Just for reference.
I know. Terrible.
And well done, Tom, for getting through us talking all over you. Well done. Good job.
Absolute pleasure. Nice to probe your attentiveness.
We'll catch you on the telly tonight, mate. All the best.
Thanks, guys.
The Big Breakfast with Claire'sy, Matt and Kimber.
He's back in the New York groove. Our former Prime Minister, Big Mel, is on the line. Good morning, Big Mel.
Good morning to Claire'sy. Hello to you, Kimber, and of course you, young Matthew. Always a pleasure to speak to you, and it has been quite a while I was unseated as Prime Minister. I'm now just a normal, regular citizen suffering mortgage strain like the rest of you on $50 million Italianate palazzo.
Of course.
Well, you are a friend of the show. Just because you're not Prime Minister anymore doesn't mean that we don't want to talk to you, Big Mel. So, I mean, you celebrated the Eagles' victory in New York City, I assume?
Well, of course, my friend, close friend, is Julie Bishop, and whenever she rings me now, and I can see Julie's there, she's still drunk, of course, from the victory, and I pick up, and she's like, hi, Eagles, I know, we're flying high, get on with it, Jules, what do you want? it's an amazing theme song, isn't it? Because the lyrics are just so intense.
Yes. Mm. I think it's from a Shakespearean sonnet.
Yeah, we're flying high. I get it. Yep, you're Eagles.
Yeah.
West Coast Eagles, yep. Okay, good.
Moving.
What else are you doing? We're the Eagles. We're flying high.
Still flying high, Big Mal. High. Yeah.
They do fly high.
Yeah.
I mean, critically, the song is correct. They're big birds,
yep.
They're kings of the big game, and they do fly high.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't want to make any false claims.
No, that's right. You don't want to in a theme song.
No. Yeah.
I mean, your song, of course, Matthew, is the Mahi Bombers.
Yes.
See the Bombers fly up to win the premiership flag. Well, that's just false advertising and they should be sued.
It's clearly a lie. Yeah.
I don't think we'll talk about my Fremantle Dockers, no.
You know, if I was going to name a football club, Clarsey, I wouldn't name it I wouldn't give it the symbol of something that sinks to the bottom. And anchors something there for eternity.
I hear where you're coming from.
You've got something that's flying high. You've got an anchor. What does that say to you?
Yeah.
Bloody unions.
You know I'm in an Eagles town,
unions,
mate.
That's what it says to me. Let's crush the workers.
Now, Prime Minister, I don't know what was happening last week. Maybe Venus was in retrograde or something, but a lot of former Prime Ministers were going a bit rogue.
Well, they all came out, didn't they?
Mm.
Kevin Rudd came out and was having a go at Paul Keating. Yep. Paul Keating had a go at me with his lacerating declaration that you'd need a microscope to find anything that I truly believed in, which I thought, well, good on you, Paul, you curmudgeonly old tool. What about Bob? You never hear from Bob. He's just up doing a Sudoku with his cigars and enjoying Blanche's company. And everyone, of course, enjoys hopping into Tony, the most hated of all ex-prime ministers. But, I won't get involved in that stuff. I'm just enjoying my time in New York.
Mm.
You've got to be there. Yeah, you're not going to sort of jump on that bandwagon, because Tony did say no wrecking, no undermining, no sniping when he left the top job, Big Mal.
Oh, well, he did, Clarsey. Of course, I will be doing wrecking, undermining and sniping.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I won't be doing that. I'll do everything I can to destroy the Liberal Party. I'll be funding campaigns against them in the Wentworth by-election, and come the election in 2019, I'll be having plenty to say by then. My tell-all biography will be out. And, I'll be doing as much as I can to tear down ScoMo and ruin it for them.
Well, given that you are...
I am a former Prime Minister.
Of course.
Given that you are telling all, then, maybe you'd like to explain. We saw you coming out of a waxing salon.
I know. I was caught short there. You know what it's like, how embarrassing it can be when you've been in to have a clean-up and all of a sudden there's the paps outside.
Yeah.
Well, I... You know when sometimes a relationship ends and you just want to get a new hairdo to start again?
Yes.
Well, that was for me. It was the purging of the Liberal Party leadership bill. I went and got the sack cracking back, and, it was a big job too. Mm. It had been a while. 3.5 hours I was on the table.
Nope.
And I tell you what, I've come away smooth as silk.
Yeah.
She loves it.
Yeah, Red Roar in the meantime. Hey, Big Mel, wonderful to catch up. We know you've got the New York groove again, and we will hear from you very soon.
Concrete jungle where dreams are made of. There's nothing you can't do now you're in New York.
This'll fill you up. Everything Perth for Brekkie. Mix 94.5's Big Breakfast with Clarsey, Matt and Kimber.
Broadcaster, comedian, actor, writer, so much more. He's a Gold Logie winner and he's been working with Andy Lee for 15 years and never sounding like they're doing any work, of course. True Story is back on Channel 9 tonight at 8:40 p.m. Hamish Blake, welcome, mate. How are you?
Bloody good to be here. Very good, guys. How are you going?
Very well. Now, Hamish, I've got to say, I think the worst thing about comedy is that people will approach you and go, now, here's a joke you can use, right?
I think that's the best thing. Then you just steal it.
Of course.
You didn't work with the same guys I used to. But, do you find now that with True Story that Andy and yourself are having people trying to share their unbelievable story with you at any chance they get?
You do get that a little bit. Look, but part of us goes, you know, let's be realistic. Like sometimes chances are it's not going to be the greatest story you've ever heard. But in case it is, we're always like, hey, don't tell us. Like, please submit it. Like, go to the website, put it in, because the whole point of the show is we hear them for the first time on the show, like, you know, tonight's episode. If we'd have heard Paul's story, if he'd have just told us in a pub, it would have broken our hearts, because we were like, oh no, now we can't use it on the show. So we're always like, hey, go and, you know, just go and do it properly. The one that does probably just get a bit, like, the now where I think we're a bit used to this situation is, like, if something very unremarkable happens, like,
you
try and get a taxi and the driver drives off or something, sometimes people turn to you and go, huh, could be a true story. And then you're like, nah, it's a pretty short ep, but I know what you mean. you're trying to say something of note happened, but now people just, like, will occasionally mistake that for going, hey, put that on your show. And then you sort of go, I'm not sure if you've seen the show.
Thank goodness you edit better than that.
It is more elaborate than I tried to get a cab and the guy drove off.
Sometimes just a brief anecdote. Not quite enough content.
Yeah. Brief anecdotes with Hamish and Andy.
And this week, buddy, we have a horse racing theme.
It's a tale by a young man named Paul. And you can't fault him for lack of enthusiasm. He's one of our most energetic, if not the most energetic storyteller we've had across both seasons. Mm. And he has a dream. He has a dream as a young boy to run in the Melbourne Cup. He loves horse racing. He loves horses from a young age. He grows up in a bit of a horse mad town. And despite the twists and turns of fate, he never lets go of the dream to run in the Melbourne Cup. And the conclusion of the story is, it's epic.
Oh, great.
Don't give anything away, because we want to watch the show.
Yeah, no, you'll enjoy it. It's a great one.
Beautiful. Mate, I've got parties being planned for an 18 and a 21-year-old within the space of a month. It'll be an expensive and very busy celebratory time here, but you're at the other end of the scale with a little one taking first steps.
Yeah, that's I feel so relieved to be at this end of the scale. No money spent whatsoever. I mean, we just had Rudy's first birthday. We, like, went to the supermarket, bought her a cake, and she just destroyed it with her fists. And at the time of her life. So you could try that for your 21-year-old. But
yeah.
Are you going to be meeting, or have you met Harry and Meghan in with your work with the Invictus Games?
It would be quite remarkable if I had met them. They're not here yet, are they? Don't they come in
no.
next week?
No. I don't. Yeah.
Yeah, but you're Hamish.
You're
dude.
Hamish. You I mean, you could have met them at the Coliseum.
Keep it to FaceTimes. We do just keep it to FaceTiming. look, I chat to them daily. I am setting up. I'll be in charge of a lot of their activities. Okay. But
I'm regretting asking the question.
I'll certainly be at the Invictus Games in Sydney in a couple of weeks, and if I see Harry go to the toilet, I'll race from my seat and try and meet him at the urinal.
Well, Hamish, I've got a great story for you.
Please submit it, Harry. It better not be about a cab leaving without taking you. Somehow I think yours would be better.
Or if it was Meghan saying, look, I followed the Queen into the toilet and it wasn't pleasant. There's your story.
Yeah, like, well, I do want to hear about how there's, like, public toilets at Buckingham Palace.
Hey, thanks, Hamish. It's good to catch up, mate. All the best.
Thanks, guys. Have a good morning.
The Big Breakfast with Clazy, Matt and Kimber.
Paul Kelly, have a listen to this from yesterday's concert.
Who's going to make the gravy now? It's going to be 100 degrees, even more maybe. But that won't stop the roast. Who's gonna make the gravy now? I bet it won't taste the same.
So good.
So good. And the way he was able to put in that computer glitch into the recording.
It's incredible.
Just brilliant. What a genius.
It was a brief power cut, wasn't it? No, lacking in the power and the talent of this man himself. Nature is the new album. It's out on Friday. Paul Kelly is with us. Good morning.
Good to be here.
Paul Kelly, how does this happen? You were here a year ago releasing another album that was just a super success. You did really well. Mm. Did you have leftover songs? Did you think, I'll just whack this on another album? Or have you just been busy again?
I had not so much left over, but I had songs written around the same time as Life is Fine. And a few of them were poems I put to music. So the thing I've been doing lately is putting other people's words to music, like poetry, as well as my own. And that's sort of sped up my songwriting a bit, because it's only, on this record, for instance, there are five poems and the other seven songs are what I wrote. So I guess it's sort of almost halving the work, because for me, writing the words is the slowest and hardest part. But if you've already got the words there, it seems to be quicker coming up with songs. Yeah, so the idea was, I didn't actually mean to have a new record out this year, but I went to EMI and said, oh, I've got this new, you've got enough tunes for a new record, and it maybe be good to come out. Now, I thought next year, 2019. And they all, you know, the head of EMI, John O'Donnell, said, well, let's put it out this year, because they thought, oh, might as well, you know, run a roll. let's put it out. So
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, Life cool. is Fine was number one while you're in town in Perth. It's great.
I'm sure writing the words are hard, Paul, but you do them rather well. So don't give up on the writing of the lyrics.
No, I don't think I'll give up. I'll always write, you know, I'm always writing things anyway. So that's
you already put out a lazy seven on this album.
That's
so
right.
That's all. Yeah. Actually, you still find that the mysterious beast writing a song?
Yeah, I just still don't know really how to do it. It just if you hear something interesting, you write it down and you try and. You write enough things down after a while and you try and join them up and you might start get the start of a song and then off you go.
And I guess that's, you know, I've heard you say that after so many years of songwriting or any writer, you start to get a little bit sick of your own words and maybe your own habits. And I guess this is just a new way in. It's another channel into a way of creating something.
Exactly. I've been writing songs for 40 years and you're right. You can start to get sick of, I think all writers get sick of their own habits and their own kind of grooves, and so to start to find a new way to write songs at my age is made me pretty grateful.
And have you got a title for next year's album, Paul? No pressure. I mean, now that you're just doing a 12-monthly release.
Well, I'm working on a collaboration with a classical group, Seraphim, Anna Goldsworthy's classical trio, which is piano, violin, and cello, and working with a Perth composer, James Ledger, who I've worked with before.
Right.
And it's a show called 13 Ways to Look at Birds. And they're all poems about birds put to music.
Okay.
So I think it's some stage next year. And the show, it premieres at the Adelaide Festival next March. But the bookend of the run of shows will be the Perth Festival.
Oh,
2020.
Great. Oh, you'll need a nasty one about...
I know what, you know, I sort of got next year sort of roughly planned.
Yeah, but that is planned.
You'll some stage I would like to record that. I don't know if you guys will be playing it on this station. You might. You never know.
If it's a bit of a nasty one about magpies, we've got an issue here.
Oh, right. There is a magpie song.
Magpie.
Oh, is there? You go.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
The magpies.
We're looking forward to hearing the rest of Nature. We've got a sneak peek. Matt said we're listening on Apple Music this morning to a bit of a sneak peek, but we're looking forward to hearing the rest of the album, and good to see you again back in Perth, Paul.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Mix 94.5's Big Breakfast with Claire-Z, Matt and Kimber.
Premier Mark McGowan joins us once again. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me.
Now, first cab off the rank, the TAB. We're going to sell it. You're hoping to get about $500 million for it. Is that all true? and I guess as someone who doesn't know anything, you know, we've got this thing that presumably we get money from every year. And if we sell it, then do we not get money anymore apart from one big, you know, chunk of cash?
Well, we said before the state election that this is an asset that we'd sell. The reason we're selling it is because the TAB, because of its size and because of who it competes with, it can't compete anymore.
Right.
So if you sell it, you get some value you can put back to the racing industry and to the taxpayers.
Okay.
And you offload it before the TAB, in effect, you know, basically ends because it won't be able to compete. So
okay.
So we get some value for the industry and the taxpayers.
So long term, it's an asset that isn't going to pay what it's paying now.
No, it doesn't really pay anything to the taxpayers.
Okay.
Its revenue goes back to the industry. That will continue, but it'll be part of a bigger organisation. One of the bigger operators will buy it and it will have a bigger balance sheet and the like. It's not like some other government assets like the Water Corporation or Western Power. It's not like those. It's basically a business that engages in betting and it can't compete with the big operators.
Okay, well, carry on with that. That's
and it's
great.
Something like 35% going back into the business of the, you know, the horse
we'll go back
industry.
Into the racing industry. So they'll be able to use 35% of the value. If we got $500 million, well, 35% of that, which is $175 million.
Look at you, guy.
I think, maybe.
well, he looked at me and I had this, like, look of...
There'll be a tweet, don't worry.
Yeah, someone will work that out. That would go into racing infrastructure. Okay. So around Western Australia, regional city will go into improving the facilities.
All right.
Yeah, 175. Well done. Now, I thought it was a nice touch, you visiting the Dome Cafe in Rockingham. I know it's your ballpark, your zone down there, but the tragic death of this mental health worker and Jacqueline Francis. But a nice touch to go down and see the staff. They would have been devastated by that.
Well, I went and spoke to the staff yesterday morning because it is in my electorate and I do just live in that area. So I regularly visit those shops, in fact, all the time. The staff were very strong, I thought. You could tell there was a bit of emotion there because, in effect, I think if she didn't die on the floor there in the cafe, she died in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. And so they went through a lot unexpectedly. They're just standing there at the counter and this woman comes in that condition. But obviously it's a bigger issue of violence towards women and violence towards people who are just doing their job.
Yes. Mm.
It's so the sort of thing that we all know shouldn't happen.
Well, Mark, we talked about that this morning on the show because there are a few words you can say here in Perth at the moment and just through one or two words you can cause major outrage. I mean, if I say plastic bags, outrage, strawberries, outrage, gaff, outrage, you know, over all of those things, and yet dead women doesn't seem to get the same outrage that those things get. And we talked about six women who have been killed in Australia in the last 5 days, which sadly is not a new thing. This has been going on for years. Like, so many women are killed every year. And I'm genuinely feeling day to day more distress because I feel like the government are silent on this issue. Now, that may not be the case, and you can tell me if I'm wrong on that, but this doesn't seem to get the public outcry or the government support that it actually requires. It's a much bigger issue than people are making out. And we're now getting used to it. Like, it's standard now. And I'd like to ask you, who can we turn to? Is there something you can do about it? And I ask you very sincerely, how do we stand up and stop this?
Well, it's wrong, and it's, as you said, it's happened for a long period of time. I think what's happened with, in particular, domestic violence, the incident on the weekend, I don't think was a domestic violence incident, but domestic violence is, it's now out of the shadows, and there is a strong cultural push towards dealing with it as a criminal offence. So the police, rather than perhaps 10, 15 years ago, they'd say that's domestic and perhaps not investigate the matter. Now they have protocols whereby they will charge these guys who do this. We've appointed the state's first minister for the prevention of domestic violence. We're building more refuges. We're actually changing the law to allow you, if you're on a rental property, if you're the victim of domestic violence, to be able to get out of
that lease. Yeah,
get out of that lease. So we're actually changing that law to allow those women in that situation to get out. And we've actually methamphetamine's part of it, of course. We've got a whole range of initiatives there. But domestic violence programs, Commonwealth funds, I've taken it up with the Prime Minister. I actually spoke to the Prime Minister about it. And so there's a whole range of programs that Commonwealth was funding to help women stay in the home, change locks, security and the like. I've asked them to continue to fund those. So a whole range of things. But as a society, as a community, we need to say no. We need to, at every level, in every family, in every community, say if you're aware of these things, you out it, and it's not acceptable.
Yeah. And so how can we make this a national push? What can you do? Like, if you're my guy, right? You're my spokesperson. You represent me. You represent the other women. You represent our whole community here. How can we make that high in your agenda to push nationally?
Well, it is on the national agenda, and the Minister for the Prevention of Domestic Violence, Simone McGurk, is on the record nationally and is taking it up nationally at various meetings that we do change this culture in Australia. I mean, I'll just tell you a brief story. When I was a kid, I had a sleepover at a friend's house. His dad beat his mum up. I'd never seen that before. Mm-hmm. And I was terrified. I was about 12.
Yeah.
I'd never seen it. I could not believe that this was occurring. Now, 38 years later or so, the good thing, if you like, is that it is now something the police will pursue. It is something that people will say no to, but we need to do more.
Mm. Yeah, cultural change. Which
there has been.
Takes a while, but hopefully been. Yeah.
And the system's got some holes in it that even though they are set up with the best of intentions, the system is not working, clearly. Mm. That's evident.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's not as though everyone's just sitting on their hands about it, but it is. You know, it's a tough situation, as the Premier mentioned. There's lots of different angles and facets to it, aren't there?
Very hard to police.
Not an easy
very
one to
hard.
Fix.
Mm.
Yes. Well, I feel it's a serious subject, and it's hard to move on. But I was going to ask you, Rotnest. I know it's a weird segue. I'm currently writing a song about Rotnest, and I wondered what your memories or experiences are.
Are they going to go into the song?
No, well, no, they may.
Well, if you do a selfie with a quokka, then you're all good.
Maybe you've obviously been to Rotnest.
Numerous times.
Yes, yep. with the family.
With the family.
Enjoy a holiday there.
Been out there, stayed in the accommodation. My first time I ever went there, I stayed in a tent. In fact, the first three or four times I went there, I stayed in a tent, in Tentland, as it then was. It's not there anymore.
Yep.
My mate, who came with us during the night, he was sleeping in the next tent about 3 in the morning. He threw on me a sign. He climbed up a some pole, and he unscrewed a sign, which he then brought back and threw into my tent.
Right.
Okay. Which, you know, I was slightly scared that I'd get arrested or something. And then he went and set it up next to the police, the police outpost there. So.
Right.
Well, you were 25 years ago how that happened. You know, I won't say who he was, but if he's listening, he'll know what he
he'll
did.
He'll know exactly what it was.
There you go. My rottenest song is written. Thank you, Premier.
Yeah, the Premier's dodgy mate.
Yeah.
And Mr. Premier, obviously, I'm a Docker, and there's a lot of Dockers people who also wish the Eagles best in the grand final. But what a great result for not just the West Coast Eagles Footy Club, but for our state. Mm. And will you be grabbing a copy of the West and getting the Eagles sticker and popping it on one of the government's cars?
Of course. That's a great idea. Hadn't thought of that. I will definitely do that. They were wonderful. And even if you support the Dockers, anyone who doesn't support Collingwood, I think, would have been very proud of the Eagles and what they did for our state.
Yeah, it was a great season.
And they were a great group of guys. I met a few of them, you know, at the function on the Sunday. Mm. Just lovely, grounded, hardworking, committed fellows. You know, they're not show ponies, just get the job done sort of crowd.
The business. Right. I think that all comes down from Adam Simpson. He's got a lot to do with that because he's always been about family values and whatnot in the team. So that's
he's a nice, understated man, but determined.
Mm. Good to see you, Mr. Premier.
Thank you.
Mix 94.5's Big Breakfast with Claire, Matt and Kimber. Everything Perth for brekkie.
Bachelorette starts tonight. And the controversy of The Bachelor has finally wound down.
Mm-hmm.
The Bachelorette is on from 7:30 tonight on 10, and she's back for a third TV dating show. Ali, g'day, Ali. How are you?
Thank you. How are you?
We're good. Now, Ali, I've seen the men in The Bachelorette, and hey, they gave you some decent lookers. You've done better than Sophie Monk did. On night one, how many of them did you find physically attractive? Like 50%, less, more?
I have got a great calibre of guys, and what is so great about them is that they're good guys. They're really kind, nice gentlemen. They're actual gentlemen.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Yeah.
What is gentlemen?
There's 24 of them in Australia, and they're all at Ali's place.
Well, good for Ali.
Right.
Ali, I have become a little bit of a bachelor and bachelorette convert over the last couple of years, and
that's good to hear.
Yeah, it is. And obviously off the back of Sophie Monk and the Honey Badger, it's nice to come back to, you know, a real person. You know what I mean by that. Not someone who was in the celebrity light before. Do you feel a sort of responsibility to bring it back to a more romantic, a more accessible bachelorette?
I don't feel a responsibility, but I definitely do feel the pressure to find someone.
Yeah.
Because it's something that I really, really want, and I want to find that one person for me. So
I know
that was the pressure around it, but I am very romantic and I'm very open with my feelings, so you can definitely expect a lot of love to be thrown around.
Good. Nice. I hope so.
There's nothing wrong with that, looking after yourself and thinking about yourself, but I just want to know, family, friends, are they saying, what are you doing, girl? Are they tired of it? What's going on?
Oh, well, actually, like, when I was deciding whether to do it or not, Mum and Dad, they weren't that impressed because they didn't want to see me hurt again.
Yeah, of course.
So I just had to make the decision by myself, but my friends are very supportive, and, my parents are definitely on board and fully supportive, and they couldn't be happier for me now, especially.
Well, you're very honest about wearing your heart on your sleeve, and we have seen you fall in love twice before on television. So how often did you have to remind yourself to take it slow this time?
Oh, all the time. And especially just holding my tongue as well, like, because it's hard not to reciprocate when someone's sort of pouring their heart out to you or telling you how they feel. And you just want to say, like, you know, this is how I feel as well. Or, you want to be able to tell them something, but you can't really. And, it was hard in that way, definitely.
And having been there so many times in terms of the show, I guess people would go, can you ever forget that there's a film crew there? But do you still find that you're able to be lost in a moment?
Oh, absolutely. I would forget all the time that they're there. I'm serious. To make it worth my time, I had to be lost in every moment. And also I had to make the most of every moment because, there was no way that I'm getting this wrong a third time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So you can't really tell us much, but when's the wedding?
21st of July.
I just love saying that to you guys because you can't give anything away, and we understand that. But we look forward to seeing the show tonight on Channel 10 at 7:30. The Bachelorette Australia, Ali, all the best.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Mix 94.5's Big Breakfast with Claire, Matt, and Kimber.
Mom is the word. The word is the word that you heard.
Janelle Koenig, good to see you.
It's been a while. Hello. It's been a while. You've had holidays. I had a holiday.
Yeah.
We all look amazing.
Well, we weren't all together on holidays. That's probably why.
So I have not caught up with you since the McDonald's party.
True.
No. No, you told us that you were doing it.
Yes, I haven't told you the outcome of the party, and it was excellent.
Okay.
It was so good. It went for 90 minutes and people got the hell out of there. It was fabulous.
And it was 10 bucks a kid.
It was all 10 bucks a kid.
Well done, Mum.
Everyone was happy. My daughter said that was the best party I've ever had.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
She's getting it all for the next 10 years.
Yeah. 21st, here you come. But get this. Okay. Now, I have a present limit on the present that I give out to other kids.
Yep.
I've spoken about this before. Yep. It's about $20, $25 if I really like the kid.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, when we brought back all of the presents from my 5-year-old, now 6-year-old's party, all of them were kind of, you know, if you've been thumbed through a Kmart catalog, you kind of know the rough estimate of what people have paid.
Yeah, sure.
Not that I'm judging, okay. But you know.
But you sort of
you
are.
Can tell when people are unders, can't you, in particular?
Yeah, and that's fine too because I want unders.
Mm.
I would like it if every parent gave my child pajamas.
Right. Yeah, right.
That's what I would like.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I will use those things.
Yeah.
Yes.
So much Play-Doh. But anyway, one of the mums at school gave my kid, it's called a fur reel. Now, it is the size of about a bread bin, and it's a talking robotic dog.
Right.
And when my daughter saw this fur reel, she lost her tiny mind.
And she threw all the Play-Doh out. Stuff all these other presents.
The fur reel then went and dug up the Play-Doh.
Yeah, that's how real it is.
Yeah.
They are worth $80.
Way over.
Way over. Like triple.
Yeah.
And of course, she tore the box open, so I couldn't take it back and say, listen, you've gone overboard.
Yeah. Yep.
But I went, you know what? I can't condone this behaviour because the other thing was that mum's child had a party the next day.
And you had to take back your crayons and colouring book that you got her.
My $20 EB Games voucher.
Got her an Audi.
It was a boy. I had to put my foot down and I rang her up and I said, listen, babe.
Yeah.
You've gone overboard.
Look, since you moved to Netherlands, this is getting silly.
And they're just trying to be nice and they want to do something special.
Yes.
And she might really love your daughter.
Yeah, and it's delightful. And I said, I know what this costs. It costs $80. $59 on special right now in the Kmart catalogue, which is still too much. And she said, I've got two words for you, reject shop.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Well done. That's
great. So she paid $25 at the reject shop.
That's good.
And so I'm assuming it will be a faulty toy.
It's full of lead.
But I did love that McDonald's party. And my favourite photo of the whole event was watching someone clean it up. I took a photo just to memorise it.
Well done.
Everything Perth for Brekkie. Mix 94.5's Big Breakfast with Clancy, Matt and Kimber.
Dr. Katie Carter joins us this morning on so many pressing issues. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Katie, thankfully the discussions around mental health are less taboo than they used to be. Mm. Are we seeing a change in who is affected by mental health issues now? Who seems to be the most at risk?
Look, it's really hard to say. What I could say is that we're starting to know that different groups of people are affected differently at different times in their lives. Like we really understand that after having a child for a family, both men and women, this is a really critical time in mental health of parents, but also mental health of infants and children. So we're starting to get really specific about what's needed and when. And that conversation is really exciting, a really interesting part to be of.
Yeah, and I'm glad you use the word exciting because for so often around this issue, you know, it's been talked about in sort of whispers and whatnot. Mm. And it's great now that we can be, you know, we all know that we go through some time in our life where we have mental health issues.
Yeah.
And we're all learning that A, it's okay to talk to each other about it, and B, you know, that is the best way to start the process of getting better is talking.
Yes. And I think this is really, you know, it's really natural part of life that there'll be ups and downs.
Yeah,
and that stigma that has kept so many people isolated and not seeking help and really quite distressed, which only, you know, kind of exacerbates any mental health system symptoms, is something that, you know, we're slowly starting to break down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
Great.
Katie, it's fairly obvious. I've been in the city about four times in the past 10 days, and it's really obvious there's a very strong link between mental health issues for people and homelessness.
Mm.
And you only have to walk down Hay Street, or especially the eastern end of Hay Street and Murray Street, and to see so many poor loves who are really struggling.
Yes.
There is a big link there. Well, is there an extended push, a really strong push to try and work through those people's problems as well?
Yeah, there really has been. There's been a real focus, particularly, you know, at Anglicare around homelessness and mental health. And looking at the connections and how we respond most and best to people who are experiencing mental health issues, also with homelessness and other co-occurring issues.
Of course.
So, and I think starting to see homelessness, mental health, family domestic violence, poverty, these issues as deeply integrated, not as separate.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a person comes in and they may have all of these things that are actually happening. So we need to be able to respond as a sector in a united way, so people aren't being sent off to here for this and over there for that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really important that we see these as co-occurring and integrated.
And we live in different times. I think, you know, we used to think that when you're a kid, you don't have any worries. You just go out and you ride your bike, and that's not what it is now. And what can parents, I mean, how can parents address that conversation with their kids? Mm. How do they know if their kids are really struggling and need someone to talk to? Because this can happen as young as six, or, you know, there are kids now that are seeing psychologists, and that's normal in our current society.
Yeah, look, I think as a parent, it can be really distressing. I know for me, that's something that, you know, when I speak with my kids, I'm really, really trying to give them space all the time so that they can process the information that's coming in, the stuff that happens to them at school, the bits of information that they hear on the radio. So slowing things down for families and children is really important so that we can, you know, I use that word process, so we can work through, you know, what's happening in a day and offload it. And that's, I think, really, really vital. So quite often as parents, we want to sit down and have this 1 hour chat and, you know, it's going to happen now because that suits our schedule. Children work differently. They might need a minute here, 10 minutes there, a cuddle here. So we need to be able to respond to what they're bringing home.
It's ongoing.
It's ongoing. Absolutely. It's constant.
It's complex too, isn't it?
So complex.
In 2018, it's complex.
Yeah. And I think if you are concerned about a child or a child that's really close to you, listen to that. Talk to someone that you trust, whether that's a family member or a friend or another parent that you admire or a professional in the community. Yeah. Listen to that own little concern that you have.
Everything Perth for Brekkie. Mix 94.5's Big Breakfast with Clancy, Matt and Kimber.
Mumford & Sons.
Oh, yes.
Kicked off with their very first album. It's been a long, long journey and an incredible one. Have a listen to the band.
But it was not your fault but mine, and it was your heart on the line. I really messed it up this time, didn't I, my dear? But I will hold on hope, and I won't let you choke.
Thought we'd say g'day to Marcus Mumford this morning, singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, funny man as well.
Funny man?
Yeah.
Wow.
I reckon you're a funny bugger.
Oh, am I allowed to swear?
Yeah, go. Go for it.
No, I'll try not to. Well, I don't know. I'm not feeling very funny today.
All right.
I'm not putting pressure on, but I saw you with that film.
Well, that is pressure. When you introduce someone as a funny man, that is the definition of pressure.
Okay, well, I'll withdraw the funny man. I'll just say, good bloke. How are you, mate?
No, why don't you start like with expectations? Real Marcus Mumford. Here he is.
Written more hits than Springsteen. Marcus Mumford.
Thanks.
No pressure, brilliant. Champ.
Marcus, it is great to have you with us. Now, you guys have been tucked away in a converted church with a string orchestra, a huge mixing desk, perfecting your new, fourth album. How has writing and recording changed from when you began? Do you still use traditional ways of creating? Are you still a pen to paper kind of guy?
I still haven't figured out a way to do it that is consistent, because it always feels accidental. However, professional you try and be, I can never remember the moment that lyrics paired up with melody. I can just never, it's always in a bit of a blur that it happens. And sometimes it literally is in dreams that it happens. So I don't think we've figured out exactly how to do it. What's different has been our attitude towards the studio and the fact that we've been able to give it a bit more time. It's certainly changed. Like we spent a lot of time just hanging out at the studio and talking and listening to other people's records. And that, I think, filtered down to the creative process as well.
Mm. And Marcus, you were saying earlier that you have fond memories of Australia. Back in the early days, you came out here not realising perhaps how popular you were here. Can you reflect on your visits here?
I always get a sense of excitement getting off the plane in Australia. And I'm not just saying that because I'm here talking to you. but no, I really do, because it was the first place we came as a band where we were sort of met with a really warm reception, sort of in the streets and at the airport and stuff. And it was the first country outside of our own to really embrace our music. And it was all just a bit of a whirlwind. And our shows here have always been so fun. And it's because it's literally on the other side of the world to where we're from. And the fact that some people might know or like our music is still a bit mind-blowing to me. So I get off the plane here and I think, right, I'm on the other side of the world. Let's get to work. Let's make it really good.
Mate, I bored these two silly over the past 12 months because in Perth, Western Australia, we never got to see Bruce Springsteen for so long. And eventually...
Did he not come?
Well, in 2014, he finally came. That's a, you know, he's in his 60s, right? So, and then he came.
That's a long time to wait.
Then he came again last year and I got to interview him and I got Springsteen to laugh. And the weirdest thing is him looking you in the eye when he's answering a question. You can't look away. It's the boss.
Yeah.
But you have a better Springsteen story. Can you share that with us?
First time we met Bruce Springsteen, we're on stage watching his show and we know his saxophone player a little bit, Jake. And halfway through the set, he like beckons in our general direction. I thought he was like trying to find someone behind us who was much cooler than we are. Like,
get a stage manager, there's something wrong.
Yeah. And it was, turns out he was beckoning us on stage for Hungry Heart and he gave me the microphone and I completely forgot the lyrics.
Oh no.
Yeah, and there was a teleprompter, which I realised too late that there was a teleprompter on stage, and it's really difficult to forget the lyrics to Hungry Heart. You know?
Yeah.
Got a wife and kids.
But I just just froze up. So I grabbed the closest maracas and maracaed my way through it.
Do you think he knew? Do you think the boss was onto you when you didn't come
out? I like to think I got away with it, but I'm sure he noticed. When you can't remember the words to Hungry Heart, you're in trouble.
No, that's when you just point the mic to the crowd and then they all do it for you. Robbie Williams style.
There was some poor Belgian behind you going, no, he was telling me to come on.
Exactly.
Yeah, like a newsreader.
Yeah.
Just a few months ago, you scored a couple of the hottest tickets in town. Harry and Megan. We know all about the Harry and Meghan wedding and all the rest of it. We all watched it. But can you be honest? Was it a bit boring in there?
No, we were in the church for a couple hours before it happened. So it was quite hot. And you're all dressed up the nines. So I got a bit tired. I got in big trouble for yawning on TV.
Oh, yeah, someone told me about that. Yeah, there was a yawn on YouTube.
I got a lot of texts.
A lot of flack.
Oh, God.
It wasn't a full yawn, though, was it? It was a part yawn.
No, it was pretty full, man. It was wide. It was a flycatcher. I said to my wife, we're not going to be on TV. No one cares about us. Like, they're getting married. And turns out we were.
Yeah.
Oops.
Good luck with Delta. We'll see you soon.
Cheers.
And we look forward to, beyond that, your musical adolescence, album 5 and beyond.
The Wicked. Cheers, guys.
Breakfast with the Lot. Mix 94. 4.5's Big Breakfast with Clancy, Matt and Kimber.
Hey guys, see if you can tell me if you have any idea, the two best-selling authors in Australia, I speak of non-fiction authors, so you know, your Leon Moriarty's aren't in the list.
Yes. Okay. I know one.
Can you think of one of them?
Barnsley.
Jimmy Barnes with those two books.
And I know the other.
Mr. Scott Payne.
Yeah.
So the Australian, right. I mean, if you look at the, I look regularly because I'm a book nerd, I look at the non-fiction bestseller list, the number one or two spot for Barefoot Investor and the one for families as well. Scotty Pape, good morning, mate.
I am the working class man. I really am.
Scotty, who knew that money would become sexy and cool?
Who would know? No, it's crazy, like that last book. And, you know, I've been on your show for years now, but I wrote that last book from the farm thinking at best, you know, maybe 20,000 people would read it. A best-selling book's about 5,000, and I think it's at about 1.3 million now.
Isn't
or something. So it's just it's completely
unreal.
Crazy.
Yeah, but well-deserved, mate. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's helped so many people. So many people have, you know, you can see the cards in their wallets and purses, mate. You've made an impact.
Well, look, money is scary. We don't know what we're doing, and I've followed your book, Papy, and it has been fantastic. Yep. Now you've got this Barefoot Investor book out there, Money for Families. So trying to help our kids, trying to get them ahead. What are the biggest mistakes that parents make when it comes to teaching kids about money?
Well, I mean, I think the main one is they don't actually teach their kids about it, you know. So they want to kind of shelter them. They don't want to turn them into sort of money-grubbing capitalists and stuff. So they just don't talk about it. And my view is that is the big thing, the mistake that parents make. So I wrote this book basically saying I dedicated it to everyone who read my last book and said, why the hell didn't I get taught this when I was a kid? Mm-hmm. So basically what I wanted to do is break down kind of the way that the last book did. They had date nights where you go out to a pub and you'd rope your partner in who maybe wasn't as interested in money to get them sorted. Well, I kind of looked at this book and thought the uninterested party is the kids. So we can't take them to the pub, unfortunately. Mm. So I decided we do this thing around family dinners. So it's based around the family dinner table on a Sunday night when, you know, you don't have sport or anything going on and you teach them really life-changing lessons around the family dinner table. So there are things like, you know, you blend your credit card in front of your kids to make a dramatic sort of make it real that you don't do credit cards. You know, you get them to do a treasure hunt. So you look at all that stuff they used to bug you for when they were, you know, years ago, and then you sell it on eBay and sort of work out that, hang on, the stuff that we buy falls to zero really quickly, and I can buy secondhand stuff. So it's all really practical things that hopefully teach your kids the value of a buck.
Scott, I'm slightly disappointed, buddy, that there isn't a chapter on how to turn your child into a money-grubbing capitalist. But I'm a 48-year-old man, and I have a lovely partner who has a 7-year-old girl. And obviously, you know, I'm becoming more and more a part of their lives. Yep. And I have been terrible with money. What can I do to get her interested in saving and finances and all that sort of stuff?
Well, good question. There's a couple of things. So little kids, so I'm thinking primary school. Mm. I have this thing called jam jars. So it's 3 jam jars that you take with your kids. So they're splurge, so you want them to spend money. Smile, you want them to save up and save for something, and then give. And the give one is about donating money to you know, people in your community, just so that you break that childhood brat thing where, because kids have got it pretty good.
Yeah.
So my view is there's 3 jam jars, 3 jobs a week. So any more than that, you're not going to do it. It's going to be too much of a pain in the backside. And for the parents, it only takes 3 minutes a week to actually get it all sorted for them. So you basically put a chore chart on the fridge, get the kids to do the 3 jobs, divvy up the 3 jam jars, and you're done. That's basically financial education in one hit.
Beautiful.
Very good.
Is what I would do.
For
high school kids, I've got this thing called the Barefoot 10. So basically, if you go through these 10 lessons with your kids and you check them off, you've kind of done everything that you need to do for your kids. So it's that idea of making sure they've got a low bank, you know, a fee-free bank account, they've sorted out their super, they've got a job when they're 15. So if you check off those 10 things, you've pretty much done everything you can to ensure that your kid won't be living in the spare room when they're 35.
Ah, very smart. Hey, Scott, I want to sort of go in that territory. In the next month, I've got an 18-year-old and a 21, turning those ages. Ooh. Now, you boasted you sold $1.3 million. Can I hit you up for a few bucks for the parties, mate? Is that all right?
Well, I don't know. Well, they can be having their own party. I guess the other thing that I would say is that you don't want to be buying your kid a brand new car when they turn 18. I say there that it's kind of like financial child abuse. If you buy your kid a brand new car at 18, you should match it dollar for dollar, make sure they go out and earn their own dough so that they can save up and buy their own car.
Yeah, they are doing that kind of thing. And that, you know, having the assets in their minds, the sort of formula to, you know, be able to tackle things themselves before they leave home. That's the key, isn't it?
Absolutely. Most kids leave home. Yep. The statistics tell us are the most financially illiterate people in Australia. What we want to do is make sure that our kids have got every chance before they get hit with Instagram and, you know, and all these unrealistic expectations and the banks giving them credit cards. You want to build up their confidence.
Especially when they're out there with Afterpay.
Correct. Afterpay. There's all sorts of things that, you know, banks have worked out trying to get kids to spend money they don't have. So for me, it's just about, you know, people talk about, you know, little things that they can do that have big impacts. Teaching your kids the value of a buck before they leave home is one of those little things that pays huge dividends throughout their life. And that's why I'm really, really passionate about this book, because I think the initial feedback is that parents are really loving it and the kids are loving it as well.
Great.
Yeah, Afterpay or an addiction to Sephora. That's a problem with the
Thanks, Scott.
Hey, Scott, always good to catch up, mate. All the best. And you'll be 6.8 million books by the time we next catch up.
Thanks very much, guys. I really appreciate it.
Everything Perth for Brekkie. Mix 94.5's Big Breakfast with Clancy, Matt and Kimber.
Talking Basketball with Damian Martin from the Perth Wildcats.
Was that you going, oh, yeah, just then?
Yeah, because I haven't heard that for ages.
I thought we had a new introduction. I was going, where's that coming from?
No.
Hey, look, they've taken it up to the Denver Nuggets, amongst other teams in that NBL-NBA sort of games in the States, which has been brilliant to watch. Bryce Cotton in career-best form, and the man himself after a win last night to kick off the NBL season. Damian Martin from the Cats. How are you, Skipper?
I'm good. It's always nicer waking up the next morning after a game when you've had a win, so I can't complain.
It's pretty good. Now, Damo, I've got to say, it's not very often I see you on the bench. I thought your contract said that you weren't allowed to sit down all season. Are you nursing a secret injury?
Oh, look, I'm not quite at 100%, but I'm getting there. But in saying that, Trev's always said that whoever the five are out on the court, if they're doing well, he's going to stick with them. And Mitch Norton, who played the same position, I thought he was fantastic in his debut game for the Wildcats. Mm. And he got a lot of runs. So was, I don't mind if I'm on the court or sitting on the bench, provided we win. So it was a great way to start the season.
Yeah, certainly was, buddy. A win in Adelaide, that's awesome. And some talk about the 2 weeks that you had in the States, the high-altitude training. Does 2 weeks in high altitude actually make a difference?
Oh, we definitely felt it. Once you land, you're like, oh, this is really nice. There's the mountains, yada, yada, yada. As soon as you start running, you're like, oh, my God, we're so high. It was, I'd never felt it. So it was crazy. And even talking to Joe Ingles, an Australian who plays for the Utah Jazz, is one of the biggest things he had to overcome as well, particularly in that first 2 or 3 weeks it takes to acclimatise. But, it's certainly something we don't have to experience in Perth, but we have hills and they have mountains. So
True.
It's slightly different.
Yeah, the mighty Perth Hills. Mate, we've had some wonderful players over the years at the Cats, but could Bryce Cotton get any better? Is there any more upside to this amazing talent?
It's amazing. One of the things we said after our game versus Denver, where we went for about 28 points, or 33 points, I think it was.
Yeah, 33, yeah.
Much better performance, guys. Now, Bryce, just confirm you're going to be on the plane tomorrow. He has NBA talent. If a GM gave him a chance, they wouldn't be disappointed. But in the meantime, we're not having him in a Wildcats jersey. And the reality is basketballers don't usually come into their prime until their late 20s, early 30s. And he's only 26 or 27, so his best is yet to come, which is amazing.
And Damo, how are you going? How is your wife, Brittany, and your daughter, Maggie? Everything good at home?
Well, Maggie just calls me Damien now.
Really?
Hang on, she's only two.
Oh, I've been gone for so long, I'm just another guy now. But I can't wait to get home today. I think we've spent 22 of the last 23 days on the road, and there's definitely been a little bit of hotel fatigue. So all the guys excited to get home, but I think in particular the dads can't wait to go home and see their daughters or sons.
And what have we got? Sunday against the Hawks. So it'll be great to see the Red Army down there at RAC Arena.
Well, I think they're doing the big walk down.
Oh, the walk, yeah.
Yeah, they're walking down from Yagan Square.
Yeah, exactly right. Start early, then walk on down. And two of our big recruits in the off-season, we actually poached from the Illawarra Hawks. So it'll be their first game in Perth wearing a Wildcats jersey instead of a Hawks one. So I can't wait to see what Nick Kay and Mitch Norton put on. A big show. I think the home fans are going to love them. But I don't think Rob Beveridge, our former coach who's now in Illawarra, was too happy about us snapping them up. So it should be a good time.
No worries, mate. And I'll tell you what, I mean, he's not out of our club, but having Andrew Bogut back in the league has got to be a good thing for basketball in Australia.
Oh, it's amazing for the sport. You know, Sydney's got the biggest market, now we've got the highest profile player. Andrew and I lived together for 2 years at the Australian Institute of Sport as 17-year-olds, and now we're going to suit up against each other as 34-year-olds. So, the only difference in those 17 years is about $100 million, but potato, potato.
In those days, you would have been sharing sort of plastic sliced cheese. These days, you're sharing glycosamine for your joints.
That's so sad, yet so true.
Yeah. Okay, mate. Well, good to talk to you, Dad. Someone has to call you that. All the best. We'll see you out there on Sunday.
Thanks a lot.
That Big Breakfast catch-up was for Allianz Home and Motor Insurance. Ah, Allianz.
The Big Breakfast with Claire-Z, Matt and Kimber. Weekday mornings from 6 on Mix 94.5.